This podcast was recorded at Hartford Street Zen Center, Isanji, in San Francisco. Please help support our temple by making a donation at hscc.org.
This is already our last full day together in retreat. By this time, usually our appreciation of impermanence has sharpened quite a bit. I think most of us probably are encountering certain challenges arising from the body-mind. And even though it's a difficult meditation, retreat space is the perfect time, the perfect circumstance for, as we have been saying, thoroughly studying this body-mind, which is to say, birth and death. I recall my first seven-day Zen retreat, and somebody, I think Tendo Zan, is fond of the quote from Master Sheng Yan, who says, "Chan retreat is like a war." And my first was like a war, definitely. It took quite a while for me to appreciate that actually it's also, and more importantly, it is peace. If one is young and vigorous, one may, ironically, one may settle for a the kind of peace that emerges when one is victorious in war. In other words, one may have the strength to put down rebellions wherever they happen, and thus establish a kind of, a sort of militant peace. But if you're my age, for instance, it's actually not so easy to quell all the rebellions And finally, one may have to make peace with the rebels, actually. The way this retreat is set up, there's an abbot, and there's a head monk, David, and we're both limping a bit. I think David's back is bothering him now, and I'm getting another headache. So these are, you could say, rebellions in the provinces. And one way to meet rebellions, of course, is with strength. I shall not be moved. And another way is to invite the rebels to the table and kind of listen to what they want. And in that conversation, a less militant peace can arise. And sometimes it means that we have to lay our body down instead of sitting vigorously upright and pursuing war with, you know. Did Master Shengyun say war with what?
No.
Oh. Presumably, you know, delusions and such. Right? War against delusions. But if we take a broader view of really of birth and death, we can see that sometimes the great victors are the ones who lay their body down. So I noticed for some reason this retreat I've been very, very sleepy. So I've been the timekeeper, Doan, for most of the periods, and some of you may have noticed me doing this. Mm-hmm. I'm not quite sure why that is, except that I guess I'm tired. And Suzuki Roshi, as you know, said really the adept Doans, the ones who are the real accomplished yogis, sleep until the instant it's necessary to ring the bell. And then so I'm kind of aiming for that yogic accomplishment. Yesterday, we told the story about Yunlan and Dawu. And I started to think, I didn't look it up, maybe it was actually Yunyan and not Yunlan, but these guys are practically interchangeable, so it doesn't really matter. Anyway, he's the one who said, awkward in 1,000 ways, ungainly in 100, I just go on. And there's a profound and not militant peace there. And it should not be confused with weakness. It's weakness to be defeated by the rebels. But to be upright and in conversation with the rebels is strength, even if they seem to be overrunning things. for these Dharma talks, I've been looking in Dogen's his collected favorite stories. He had 300 favorites and tales that he collected, and he didn't comment on them, at least in writing. So this might have been, you know, his bedtime reading. Kept it by his futon. Before bed, he'd look, flip through it, and find one of his favorite of the 300 stories, and read himself to sleep. I told one of them yesterday, the one about ancestor Qingyuan and the sixth ancestor. And Qingyuan asks one of those questions, as we said, that sums up birth and death. He says, why did Bodhidharma go to the trouble of coming all the way to China? And sixth ancestor says, come closer. Expecting great things, Qingyuan approaches. And the sixth ancestor says, study this completely. So this morning I was looking at another of Dogen's favorites. This one is involves another great ancestor, Shirto, Sekito Gisen, who wrote the Harmony of Difference and Equality. And somebody asked him another one of those questions. The words were different, but the sense is the same. He asks, what is the fundamental principle or meaning of Buddha Dharma? Shirto says, no attaining, no knowing. And the monk it doesn't say he was puzzled exactly, but as is often the case, the questioner seems to want something more, so he says, "Well, but is there a turning point going beyond?" And Chouteau says, "The wide sky does not hinder the flying clouds." So, you know, you could call that a kind of poetic response, but it is one that is rooted in the cultivation of seated meditation. And it's phrased in such a way that those of us who practice that cultivation can feel how those words, how that response plucks a string in our body mind. Long before I exactly. It's not like I understand Zen stories now or something, but I guess maybe they feel more like old friends. And for a very long time, they just felt like odd strangers. But even when they were odd strangers, when I would hear one of these ancestral tales, particularly recited in practice context, I would feel something in my body. I could feel the string being plucked. So maybe you can too. It's nothing, it's not so dramatic. It's just you can feel the body mind responds. It's just a little something, a little leap, a little thrill, a little chill, something. Very subtle, and yet it's there. Even people who say they don't like these stories can have that response, although it may be a long time before they recognize it. Before they recognize that Chouteau is speaking to the one who can't be hindered. You might remember one of our most important stories, one of our favorite campfire tales, the one about the insentient teaches the Dharma. It's a very important story for us. It's too long to go into, but There is one point where remember if this is I think this is when Dongshan is reciting this story to Guishan, and he says that the national teacher, Nan Yanwei Chong, in this tale, has been talking to a monk about how insentient, he says, insentient beings teach the Dharma. And the monk says at some point, "Why can't I hear it?" And the national teacher says, "Although you can't hear it, you cannot hinder the one who hears it." And that's the one holding the string that gets plucked. Hearing words like "the wide sky does not hinder the flying clouds." In our practice, there is one way to speak of our experience is as the wide sky. And although you may think you don't understand what that refers to, you can't hinder the one who understands. There is a vast, boundaryless sky. And the clouds are always passing and passing, unhindered. And sometimes we cultivate the Buddha way by taking our seat and just watching as the clouds pass unhindered, hour after hour. And they can be thoughts, they can be delightful memories, painful memories, fragments of song, entire operas, just passing. And our our understanding, if you like, is rooted in this vast sky. Our trust and confidence in the practice of the Buddha way is rooted in this vast sky. That's what we come back to over and over again when we return to the hall. You may think, "Well, if there's a vast sky, why can't I see it?" And I think there is one who knows that "why can't I see it" is a cloud. It's also the sky, but that's a little more subtle. more we practice, the more our trust in this great, wide open, boundaryless heavens, the more that trust is established. And then clouds come, clouds go, and no one is disturbed. So I'm speaking of the, in particular, you could say, the treasure of the house of Caodong. And it's it's rather subtle. And sometimes having patience with subtlety is difficult for us. Having patience with the way things are is difficult. Which is why it's no accident that one of the six perfections is patience, and that one of the special accomplishments of the Bodhisattva is patience with the way things are, namely, nothing really happens. That's a tough one. Tempted to think that those who know and trust this subtle, well, I think I'll call it a power, this subtle power. Those who know and trust this subtle power are maybe not so many. But I think all of you do. I think there's some folks, though, who they will not be able to trust the Buddha way unless they understand themselves as having won a war. I think that's unfortunate, but maybe that's okay. I think if people speak that way, they're not speaking about the treasure of the house. They're speaking about another treasure of another house. Today we have a little more time to cultivate together. To take our seat as the vast sky. Before you know it, we'll have many things to do. We'll return to our workaday world. And we'll even invite the workaday world into our temple here. And tomorrow, we are having a little party for the Shuso. Except we have no idea how many people will come. It's a little difficult to plan a party if you don't know who's going to be there. So we'll just see how that works. And you're all invited, and if you wish, you can ask the Shuso any question. And then after that, we will have a short ceremony for closing our ango, our study period. And then we'll have refreshments. And then your or our experience of this time and practice we've spent together will become ever more intimately your own tissue, your own flesh and blood. So please don't worry about remembering the great insights you had during retreat. They are not important. The important ones go right into your body. Questions today? Comments?
So building on something from yesterday, you said just right at the end about how it's not like fighting a war practice. And then yesterday Jim was talking about someone from his book study group that was a skeptic and was kind of pushing stuff away and saying, mm-hmm. I've never seen any bodhisattvas, has anyone seen anyone, and mm-hmm. advise him, just tell him to keep looking. Mm-hmm. And I have someone in my life who is always like kind of fighting with me about Buddhism and mm-hmm. what do you mean suffering? It's always been, you know, what's the word, you know, and it's mm-hmm. like, it is like a battle. And as you said that, and thank you, Jim, for yesterday, because it's not really a question, it was just more like little baby realization. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Working with, you know, we have a vow to save all beings. It's not like we personally can do anything, but for me to recognize when someone's fighting with me, it's not really me, it's something that they can't quite
understand. That they can't quite, yeah. Well, there's also, I think particularly in Zen, there's a certain style where you kind of overpower the person, I've heard. Somebody I know went to see a modern teacher of what I call the other house. And
inside?
I wasn't going to say that. But and this person said that it was so great talking to this person. He said it was like sitting in front of an open blast furnace. And I thought, why would anybody want to do that? Okay, whatever turns you on, but that's for people who really want to do that. It's good that it's there. But there's another way, too. And that's good also. Yes.
So, I do enjoy the whole piece. I'm thinking a little bit of something Hongzhi said, where he says aggressive too much concentration leads to aggressiveness, whereas too much calm leads to murkiness and wasted dharma.
Mm-hmm.
So where do you want to give any? Oh, probably don't want to say. But where one might think, oh, this might be a little bit more murkiness than necessarily peace.
Mm-hmm. So, you should check that out. And if you have any, you know, some confusion about it, you might check it out with someone. But it sounds like that's the middle way. Neither too much nor too little. You can perform all sorts of interesting yogic feats with concentration, but it can be quite aggressive. And yet if we're too consistently, you know, just comfortable, then a kind of complacency can develop. And that's sort of a murky state of mind, you know. But that's not what Chouteau is talking about when he's referring to the boundaryless heavens. If your head is kind of like sunk like this, then chances are you're a little murky. To appreciate the boundaryless heavens, it helps a little bit to have your head up there. But everyone has to experiment with that themselves. Or herself. So, definitely the middle way. Kato-san, do you have any questions today?
No, I was thinking a little bit about just that, you know, the subtle's not very marketable.
It is a tougher sell, man. Yeah? That's true. Well, it is possible to dress it up in certain ways. And then when people aren't looking, you snatch its clothes off. But we can dress it up. And we try that a little bit here. I mean, most of what we see around us is dressing. Window dressing. Did you have a question?
I was walking over here this morning. Bliss bunny state. Maybe it was low blood sugar, I don't know. But the, you know, the moon was in the clouds, and I was looking at that and passing people sleeping in doorways, and I was thinking, well, the moon's where it's supposed to be, and they're where they're supposed to be. And then I thought, no.
Mm.
No, they're not where they're supposed to be. They are where they are right now.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not supposed to be there. the moon's where it's supposed to be. So I was grateful for that little catching that mistake.
Well, I don't know if it was a mistake exactly, unless it leads to a place of, oh, there's nothing to do, everything's fine. Let's just leave it. That's not so good. In a way, they are where they belong, and yet they also need something. And that's up to us, and we don't seem to be doing a very good job with that. Easier to sell a blast furnace. Come in, everyone. Look at the blast furnace. It's really cool. I mean, it's really hot.
We could invite everybody to listen to a chihuahua snore.
Oh, yes. Well, see, there are a lot of people who would like that, and for some, it will be too subtle. You know? That's our life. And thank you all for practicing together. And, let's make sure to keep taking care of our retreat space. Just as we entered together and create the space together, then eventually we open the space together, you know, release it. So it's good to do that as one body. Yes?
One more question. Yes. Before we go. We usually take a kind of a photograph. We usually do it on Saturdays because we know we have a few more bodies, which is good marketing.
It is.
So I'm wondering if, like, right after this we
can
have
a photo op.
A quick photo op with the extra bodies here. Are good.
That would be great.
And when they come here, we'll rip out the extra bodies.
Yes. That would be good. Yeah. Thank you.
May our intention eagerly extend to every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are bound.